Jade is a composite. The blockages, the conversations, the doors that closed are real, and they are closing across Northwest now. This is their story. In one of England's poorest constituencies on official measures, chemistry graduates who want to teach are turned away from training programmes while secondary schools operate with empty science labs and unfilled posts. The expertise exists, the need is desperate, but the institutions designed to connect them have been starved of the resources to function.
I've always loved the moment when someone finally gets it. You know that look when a complex equation suddenly makes sense, when all the symbols click into place? That's what drew me to teaching. I'd spent years helping my younger brother with his homework at our kitchen table in Greenfield, watching his face light up when he grasped something that had seemed impossible 5 minutes earlier. After my chemistry degree at Manchester Met, teaching felt like the obvious next step. My mum worked nights at the Royal Oldham Hospital, my dad drove buses for First Greater Manchester, and they'd always said education was the way forward. I wanted to give back. To stand in front of a classroom full of teenagers and show them that chemistry wasn't just abstract formulas, but the language that explains how the world actually works. When I applied for the teacher training programme at Manchester Metropolitan University's Institute of Education, they accepted me immediately. "We need chemistry teachers desperately, Vivipan," the admissions tutor told me over the phone. "You're exactly what schools are looking for." Then came the catch. The bursary had been cut from £24,000 to £15,000 that year. "Treasury spending cuts," she said, her voice apologetic. "We simply don't have the budget." I took out extra loans anyway. What choice did I have? The course was everything I'd hoped for, challenging and inspiring, but the financial pressure was constant. My placement year was at Oldham Academy North, a school I'd walked past countless times growing up. The head of science, Mr. Williams, was brilliant, the kind of teacher who made even the periodic table seem exciting. But during one of our planning sessions, he gestured toward the corridor. "See those three labs down there?" he asked. "All empty. We can't recruit chemistry teachers. It's been 2 years since we had anyone qualified to use them properly." I asked him why the recruitment was so difficult. "Shame about the bursaries," he said, shaking his head. "We used to get brilliant trainees like you every year, but now most can't afford the training. The ones who can often go straight into industry. Better pay, no student loans hanging over their heads." I finished my training and got a job at another school in the area, but the loan repayments on a teacher's salary were brutal. At a Northwest teacher recruitment fair, I met Marcus, who'd trained in Rossendale. Same story. Bursary cuts. Financial pressure, schools desperate for science teachers but unable to attract them. "It doesn't make sense, Vicepin," he said. "The kids need us, the schools want us, but somehow there's no money to train us properly." Walking past the university's education building one evening, I noticed something that stopped me cold. Whole floors of lecture theatres were sitting in darkness. A security guard was doing his rounds, and I asked him about it. "They've had to cancel most of the evening courses," he explained. "Not enough funding for trainers, but the building's just sitting here most nights." He told me they used to run classes until 9 p.m, training teachers for evening and weekend programmes. "Now look at it. Could train twice as many people in here, but we're told there's no money." That's when I started paying attention to the contradictions. The admissions office told me there were 20 unfilled places on the chemistry teacher training programme that year. 20 people they wanted to accept but couldn't afford the bursaries for. Mr. Williams had 3 empty chemistry labs that he couldn't staff. And here was this building, designed for twice as many students, sitting mostly empty because of funding cuts. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. It sounded reasonable. Everyone was tightening their belts, making difficult choices. But standing outside that darkened building, watching a security guard patrol empty lecture halls while 20 potential chemistry teachers were told they couldn't be supported, something clicked. The same kind of click I'd seen on my brother's face years earlier, when an impossible equation suddenly made perfect sense. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. But the people existed. The skills could be taught. The materials and buildings were available. All of it was there, waiting to be connected. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. When the Treasury said there was no budget for teacher training bursaries, they didn't mean the printing presses had broken down or the Royal Mint had closed. They meant they had chosen not to spend the money that would connect desperate schools to willing graduates. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. I'm still teaching, still watching this play out across the Northwest. Every year, more chemistry graduates walk away from teaching because they can't afford the training. Every year, more science labs sit empty while schools advertise posts they can't fill. And every year, someone in Whitehall says the same thing. There is no money. I hear it differently now. The real question was never about money. The limit was never the pounds and pence. The limit was the willingness to spend them into the places and the people who needed them. This is not just my story or Marcus's story. It is the story of every constituency where brilliant people and desperate needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster insists the cupboard is bare.
What Jade experienced has a name, cherry picking. This technique involves selecting rare examples where government spending produced poor outcomes while ignoring the overwhelming evidence of what happens when public investment works. Think of tobacco companies in the 1950s, pointing to the occasional smoker who lived to 90 while dismissing thousands of studies linking cigarettes to cancer. They picked the cherries that supported their case and left the rest of the evidence on the tree. In Jade's story, the Department for Education and HM Treasury applied the same selective logic. They could point to isolated cases where teacher training programs had high dropout rates or where bursary recipients left the profession early. These cherry-picked examples became the justification for cutting funding across the board, even though the majority of chemistry teachers produced excellent results for decades. The overwhelming evidence showed that properly funded training programs filled classrooms with qualified teachers, reduced staff shortages, and improved educational outcomes for thousands of students. Every time Jade was told there is no money, officials were applying household logic to a currency issuer. The UK government creates pounds before it spends them, not after. The real constraint was never financial. It was the political choice to treat teacher training as a luxury rather than essential infrastructure. The austerity objection that, look what happened to countries that overspent on public services, deliberately confuses the issue. Countries that issue their own currency have never defaulted due to domestic spending, while Nordic countries with large public sectors have experienced fewer debt crises, not more. The resources existed, the people existed, the decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Oldham East and Saddleworth ranks 107 out of 543 English constituencies on deprivation, placing it in the second most deprived decile. English Indices of Deprivation 2025, MHCLG. The constituency has 714 registered charities, Charity Commission Register, England and Wales. Total grants received were £18.7 million, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.